This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hello, everybody. Welcome once again to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. We're here each and every Saturday, and we're talking about the disease of addiction. Recovery Radio is sponsored by Retreat, premier addiction treatment centers, about which more a lot later. I hope you can spend some time with us as you're driving around on a busy Saturday late afternoon and evening. I don't need to tell anybody listening to this program that this subject is now much, much in the news. While drugs and substance abuse and addiction have been with us as a society for a very, very long time, it's safe to say it has never reached the status or condition we find ourselves in now. This is, without fear of exaggeration, probably the worst situation vis-a-vis the disease of addiction that this country has ever faced. And I'm old enough to look back over things like the crack cocaine epidemic and other outbreaks of heroin abuse and think, how could that be? But it's true. Devastating, devastating effects of the disease of addiction we're going through right now. So it's important to walk in someone else's shoes on many of these issues. And that's what we have for you today. 5 years ago, a young fellow by the name of Sage Capozzi passed away as a result of his substance abuse problems and the disease that he had. His family, as you might imagine, struggled with the dreadful, dreadful feelings of grief and confusion, shame, anger, everything anybody goes through when they lose somebody to this horrible disease at such an early age. They came out the other side of that to the extent that's possible and created something called Sage's Army. And we're here to find out about that. We're here to find out about young Sage with his father, who joins us from, he's in a secret location now. We can't explain where he is. Carmine Capozzi is our guest on the telephone. Actually, Carmine is joining us from his truck somewhere because he's a busy guy. Carmen, thanks so much for joining us on Recovery Radio. I find these
stories,
as you know, these first-person accounts of people who have struggled with this situation to be very beneficial. Unfortunately, even when they result in the tragedy that your family has suffered. So we thank you so much for sharing this story with us. Can you tell us about Sage, and can you tell us about the Capozzi family?
Sage grew up in Irwin, Pennsylvania. He had a normal life, sports, music. Sage loved the golf. He wrestled, played baseball, just like every other kid. I'm self-employed. I have a business, and Sage worked the summers with me. In between work, he would golf and play music. And, one day, Sage was 17 years old, and he took a day off of work with me. It was his junior summer, and he asked if he could go golfing. And I said, sure, bud. He was going golfing with three of his buddies, and one was a star football player of his high school. And I said, go enjoy the day. And about an hour or two later, I got a call from the state police saying, we have your son and two boys. And I went to the police barracks and seen three boys sitting there in shackles and handcuffs. And that day I got the worst news that I could get. And my son was abusing pills and heroin. And what happened that day is they broke into cars to afford the pills. I didn't know my son had a pill problem or a heroin problem. When we found out, they were breaking into cars to support their habit, and what we found out later was that the one young man that was the football player broke his leg. and was prescribed OxyContin at a young age, and he loved it. He loved the feeling. And, you know, he turned on his buddy and said, man, you got to check this out. This is good. And sadly, two of those boys are gone.
Two out of three.
Passed, yeah. And that was the first time that we found out Sage was abusing pills and heroin. You know, at 13, the school came to us and said, Sage has ADHD. And, you know, you need to see a doctor and get this taken care of. I didn't see it because Sage was very active. I know my son didn't like math and didn't like English. And he struggled sitting through those classes. He was a spitting image of me.
Right.
I struggle with math and English. Well, we did what the doctor said. We put him on Adderall, and we noticed the change. We didn't like it. I questioned it. And some people Adderall works for us. I'm not, you know, putting it down, but we found out it was a narcotic. We did our own research and said, well, this is a narcotic. You know, Sage was, he stopped doing the things he liked. It reacted different to him. It numbed him out. It phased him out. Like, he quit playing his guitar. He just had no drive anymore. So finally we went in to the doctor, checked Sage out, and then he handed us a script. And by this time, we took Sage off the Adderall, and we got him on Strattera. And the doctor, when it was all done, he goes, oh, okay, everything's good, and handed my wife a prescription for Adderall. And my wife looked at him and said, we took him off this, and he's like, oh, you did? And she goes, you didn't even look at his paperwork, did you? And he's like, oh, Strattera, okay, you got him on Strattera now. Oh, okay. And he wrote a script for Strattera. And that day I said, enough of this. Well, I believe that opened up a door, because we found out later that Sage was going to farm parties. And a farm party is when kids steal medication from home, whatever it is, and they put it in a bowl, and they all just dip in, and they get whatever they get. We found this out later, after, you know, the addiction surfaced.
What was his behavior like? Because, as you know, it's terrifying for people to hear your story, because they like to believe, we all like to believe, that heaven forbid this disease should visit one of our children, we would see the signs. You saw nothing. Is that what you're saying?
No. I mean, we saw signs of change, you know, and as parents, we write it off as, okay, they're going through puberty, they're going through the change of life, all that stuff, you know, and they want to fit in, and, you know, they're trying to find where they fit in. And so, you know, I just sat on them and said, sports, like, we spent a lot of time together. You know, parents say, I spend 24 hours with my kid. It don't matter. Because it can happen in 2 minutes. You know, they can go into the bathroom at school, or they can go down the street to a friend's house, and it can happen like that. And all it is one moment will change them. So you could sit on your kid all you want. It's the influences that you don't see. And, you know, my son hated drugs. He hated drugs because he lost his brother, my stepson. He lost his brother in 2002 to drug-induced suicide. I was going through a divorce, and David got wrapped up with cocaine. And one day, he did a bunch of it, wrote me 5 suicide letters, me and his mom, and he hung himself. And his letters made no sense to us. Like, he just said, I'm sorry for being a piece of crap, you know, sorry for not, you know, being the son that you wanted. And, like, he had this image of himself that just wasn't true. And
so Sage is aware of that and the horror.
Yeah, Sage was 11 when David died. Mm-hmm. Or 10, I'm sorry. He was 10. And Sage was devastated. You know, the whole family was. And Sage was trying to figure that all out, but he hated drugs so much that he used to write, Sage used to write anti-drug songs, anti-bullying songs. He was trying to speak, you know, he was getting his pain out through his songs, which I didn't understand, you know. And I mean, I would listen to him and go, all right, yeah, wow, that's good. And I thought it was therapeutic for him to get this stuff out. Sage was in counseling. We had him in counseling since David died. You know, as a teen, the influence came, and he was trying to figure out, you know, what people liked about it.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about it. Sage tried marijuana. Yeah. He hated it. I didn't like the way it made me feel.
You had a dialogue about the dangers of drugs and alcohol. While he was abusing them, is that what you now found out to be going on?
Well, our dialogue before we knew he was using, our dialogue was drugs bad, don't do drugs, stay away from the ones that are doing it. You know, we had that talk, but we never had a discussion of what drugs, you know, how they change your brain, things that I know today. Mm-hmm. You know, when his brother died, we had talked of, like, this is what drugs do to you. You know, Dave, and when David committed suicide, we blamed ourselves for not seeing it. You know, we, as parents, we said, oh, my God, what did we do wrong? How did we miss that? Mm-hmm. And when David died, we basically went into the shame, the guilt, and hide. You know, it's like we must have been bad parents for not seeing that.
A fairly typical response to this tragedy. Yeah. Carmine Capozzi is our guest. Carmine joins us on the telephone to talk about his family's struggles with the disease of addiction, or substance abuse in general, which now I find out has claimed two of Carmine's sons, the second of whom, his death 5 years ago, resulted in the formation of something called Sage's Army, which is a nonprofit. We're going to talk more about that and get more of Carmine Capozzi's story straight ahead. You're listening to Recovery Radio. Please don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano is my name. Our guest on the telephone is Carmine Capozzi. Carmine is here to tell us the circumstances surrounding the death of his son, Sage, at the age of 25 years ago from substance abuse and the resulting struggle that his family obviously has gone through. Carmine, before we pick up the story of Sage's substance abuse problems, all these events occurred over 5 or 6 years ago for you and your family. You must look at where we've come in the 5 years since Sage's death and be absolutely stunned that the problem has gotten that much bigger. I mean, when Sage was abusing substances and ultimately died, there wasn't this widespread talk of an epidemic, was there?
No, nobody talked about it. We stayed silent because we didn't want anybody to know, because what would they think? You know, Sage wanted to go into the services. And so we just stayed, all right, we'll fix this. As parents, we'll fix this. We didn't understand my son's walk through recovery.
Right. And the public and the media was not, you know, they were paying lip service to drug and substance abuse, but they were not aware of what was coming down the road, this full-blown epidemic of opioid addiction.
No, they didn't see it. And you know, we were all blindsided to it, you know. It come into the suburbs, and, you know, from 17 to 20, Sage's life from 17 to 20, it was a roller coaster ride, up and down. You know, one minute your son's this crazy, evil person, and the next minute, you know, 2 days later, he's back and you're on a golf course, and nothing makes sense.
How old was it? When was the first time you got Sage into a treatment facility because you realized that this was a problem that needed professional
help? It was 18 because of his consequence. He got in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
He got kicked out of high school, and it got him put into an all-boys program, and he became a leader. Out of 72 guys, he got the highest position in that program called a guide. I didn't know that until after he died. And the counselor said, where did we fail Sage? You know, personal responsibility is one, but part of the problem was they tried fitting Sage into their box. And we know today there's multiple paths to recovery. There's not just one way.
How many times
they tried fitting it to their box.
How often was Sage in that 3 year period before he passed
away?
He was
probably in three or four different rehabs, and he would go. I think he completed one, and then his 30. No, it was like 30 days, and then because I had good insurance through my work, and then the other ones was like 3, 4, 5 days, and he was out and coming home. Signed himself out.
Oh, he did. So, at the height of his substance abuse problems, what was he abusing?
Heroin.
So he'd become an IV drug user.
Yeah, it was prescription pills and a lot of Vicodin and what's the other one? Percocets,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oxycontin, mm-hmm. And then the heroin.
As you watched Sage struggle with the disease and go in and out a couple of times of treatment facilities, what was your feeling and what was your family's feeling about what you were doing? Did you feel? I mean, I can understand you going, "Boy, this has got to work," or "I hope this works." Or what were you feeling?
We were looking for the savior. We were looking for the person to wave the magic wand, you know, that was going to fix our kid. You know, we would send him to rehab and go, "All right, he's going to get this." And then when he would come home, like from his 30 days, we were like, "Okay, he's better now." We didn't understand that it's not over. You know, we didn't understand. Say, just say, "Dad, I need structure." I'm like, "Well, you got structure here, bud. You know, we're a very structured family." And what he was talking about was recovery structure. You know, like, we needed to live a different life in our home to understand addiction. And I didn't understand addiction. You know, I just thought my kid would get this. And then he had to go to meetings and, "Okay, you're cured." That isn't the way it works.
Yeah, I'm struck by, you know, your story of when your son's problem becomes full-blown and his treatment in and out and his ultimate passing, that five-year period coincides with the length that this program has been on the air, and it's striking to me how different things were when you were grappling with this stuff. You had nobody to talk to, did you?
Nobody. No, we had nobody to talk to. And the message back then was we got a lot of, "He has to want to kick him out." And I'm like, "But he's 17. Where's he going to go?" "Oh, you're an enabler." And I'm going, "Wait a minute. I just want to help my kid." So the talk should have been, "Well, look, this is where parents can get the power back through programs like Narnon, Al-Anon, family coaching." We didn't have the understanding of that back then.
I know.
And it was very, you know, any addiction group or any type of group like that is very hush-hush. And it stays in the church basements. And, you know, I had nothing to be ashamed about. Nothing. My son touched a substance that changed him. And I didn't cause that, and I just didn't know how to deal with it. A lot of anger, a lot of fights, that's how we dealt with it. And then we would have the emotional sit-downs and cry together, And
Carmine, I want to pick up on that in the next segment. I don't want to get too far behind here. Carmine Capozzi lost his son Sage 5 years ago to the disease of addiction, and subsequently, as a result of that, they have created a nonprofit, Sage's Army, that we'll find out more about straight ahead. This is Recovery Radio. Don't go away. Hi, welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano with you. We're here on Saturdays. We're talking about the disease of addiction. We'll go back to our guest in a second, but I want to remind you that the whole thing here is the result of the good work done at Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. They are the sponsors of the program. I tell you this every single week, as hard as it may be to believe that a sponsor of a program is not selling anything. In a sense, Retreat isn't selling anything except hope and answers to questions and support for people who are confronting the disease of addiction. Are they a premier addiction treatment center? They certainly are. You can check that out for yourself. Their reputation is well known. If Retreat can help you or your loved ones, they stand ready to do that. But I give you this phone number for informational purposes. Any questions you have about anything you've heard on this program or anything that's going on in your life, you can call Retreat and rest assured they will give you real, real answers. So here's the number, and I hope you never need to use it. 855-859-8808. 855-859-8808, Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. We're on the telephone with Carmine Capozzi, who, like so many, many, many people now, has seen this disease in its most terrible form. Carmine's 20-year-old son, Sage, passed away 5 years ago as a result of substance abuse. Carmine, again, it's only a five-year period since all of these events occurred. But as you know, and certainly I know, the world has changed. There's a lot more that needs to be done, but there's a lot more awareness now of what the stakes are and how widespread this thing is. Can you share with us the day you found out that Sage had passed away?
Yeah. I gave Sage an ultimatum. He was slacking. He was going to college to get his credits. He wanted to go to the Marines, and he decided to leave. And we just lost my mom to cancer, and so Sage was taking it hard. They spent a lot of time golfing, and he decided, like people do. People go sit in bars to drink their day away or drink their sorrows away. Well, Sage picked his drug of choice. He figured one more time, and it killed him. It's nothing like you see in the movies. But what happened was I spent 2 days on the floor, and the second day I heard Sage's voice say, "Dad, get up. They're not bad kids. You got to help." I heard my son's voice, and it put this drive in me that I had to do something. And 8 days later, Sage's Army started through something I said, and through a Facebook page. And what it did was it connected my county and my state with all these other people. Within 24 hours, 1,800 people signed up, and it connected all of us. And my wife said to me, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I'm just going to talk." First year we met in D.C., mm-hmm. 800 of us, and we stood in front of the FDA building. It was called the Fed Up Rally. 800 of us stood in front of the FDA building, and we protested against we wanted hydrocodone rescheduled from a 3 to a 2, which was, you look back on it, it was major at the time for us to get that done, and we did. But it's such, there's so much more that needs to be done. But that's where Sage's Army started, and I refuse to stay silent. I believe silence kills. There's two people that want us silent, the drug dealer and the devil. And as long as we're silent, they stay in business, and I refuse to stay silent. We bring it to light, and they flee.
Carmine, when you were moved to in your grief and to reach out, you said through social media. Were you surprised at the speed with which other people connected? Were you aware that
I was blown away?
Yeah,
I was blown away that other people like me were dealing with this. You know, at Sage's funeral, we had 500 people come through the line. I remember 12 parents that said, my son or daughter. And I just thought, we all stayed silent. None of us talked to each other about it. Your Sage is truant officer. We never talked about it. He has a daughter. Amazing young lady. Is now over 5 years clean. And they both go into the schools and speak together. Amazing. But that's something that we didn't talk about because what would people think?
So Sage's Army is a result of that sort of conspiracy of silence that we were all living in. And in spite of the fact that now we know we have a problem on our hands, there's still a lot of people that don't know who to talk to. And what should families be? What should families be doing that are still, you know, lurking in the shadows, trying to make this wish this thing away?
Well, you got to get involved. You got to take the power back. You know, you can't change your loved one, but you can take the power back in your life. Family recovery groups, Narnon, Al-Anon, any type of meeting. You know, I tell parents, go sit in an open NA or AA group, and you can't say anything, but you can learn, or go talk to somebody in recovery and what they did and how they manipulated their parents. And sadly, some parents, all they do is they go into hiding and hope they don't get the phone call. You know, we got to give society the knowledge to understand addiction, you know, from our parents to our doctors to our teachers, from everybody. You know, we have a lot of schools now taking action. Sage's School is leading the front in, of change. You know, they're educating teachers on signs to look for, and if they see a sign, what action do they take? You know, it's awareness, it's compassion, it's awareness for the person that has a problem, compassion for the person, and you have to take action. What is that action step? What phone calls? What, you know, and what we need to do is we need states to connect. What's working here? What's working in this county, in that state? You know, we need to collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of gaps in the system.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the awful irony of this disease that it had to reach the catastrophic proportions it has before people went, wait a minute, there's a real problem here. We got to start talking about this. When it was going on and before you became an activist in this cause, what was the toll on you and your family? Were there times when you thought you were all going to go down as a result of this disease?
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, the devastation, it tears families apart. I mean, there was days screaming matches with my son, and you're just going, you know, banging off each other's head. Like, you know, it's devastating because we don't know how to help. We're powerless to help our children, our loved ones. You know, sadly, they have to learn how to help themselves. And, but there are ways, you know, when we were going through it, there was times where I thought, you know, I would kick my son out and just hope that he would never come back. Because you didn't want to face it again. And then when they would leave, you're sitting on the couch going, oh my God, where is he? What did I do? What did I say? I said the wrong thing. And you're texting him and you're calling him and you're like, bud, I love you. You know, call me back, please. I'm sorry. I mean, that's the stuff that you went through as a family.
Yeah, families are.
And then
are
the fights between mom and dad. It's just terrible.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, I mean, you know, bad diseases are affected the entire family. Sure, if someone has cancer, that affects the whole family. But there is something different about addiction with regard to it being a family disease.
Right.
In that it, you know, the family actually needs help if they're going to be any good at helping the loved ones.
Right. It's a family disease. It doesn't just affect that one person. It affects the whole family. It's like if I have diabetes, you know, we go to a doctor, a nutritionist, and now the whole family dynamics changes because mom has to cook different, you know. And with addiction, the family doesn't understand, but they are the most important part of their loved one's recovery through understanding their walk. What is it that they have to do? Where? What are meetings? And what is required of them through the walk of recovery? Yeah. You know, some families, they still have drinking parties, you know, like football game parties. You know, everybody's drinking at a football game party or tailgate, and the parents think, well, you can have a couple beers, you know, the ones that are over 21, you can have a couple. They don't understand. I go out to dinner with guys in recovery, and they got to ask what the dessert is made of. You know, like some desserts are made with alcohol.
Yes, I know. Let me we're going to take another break here. Before we do, though, I want to ask you, and you might not even have any answers here. The people that are going through this hear what you're saying, but there are other people out there who, for whom this disease mercifully has not affected them or their families, and they're thinking it's not going to happen to us.
Yeah.
What do you say to people like that?
What I say is I pray for them. I pray for them. I hope that it doesn't touch their family, you know, but I guarantee if they look deep enough, somebody's dealing with it. You know, I just, 2 days ago, in the paper, my cousin is a doctor, and he just got busted. He just got busted. And this man, you look at, he's not a drug dealer. Mm. I think he's an addict.
Yeah, you know what?
And we've never seen it. He's a well-known doctor.
That's what I try to impress upon people without sounding like a scaremonger. But this thing is so big and so pervasive now that it's almost as though it were a communicable disease. It's almost like it was an airborne disease. And if you're sitting someplace with young children or teenagers and you don't think that there could be a problem, I think you're fooling yourself. Carmine Capozzi is our guest. He is heads a nonprofit called Sage's Army. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the work they're doing and maybe how you can get involved where you are. This is Recovery Radio. We'll be right back. We're back on Recovery Radio. I want to thank Carmine Capozzi for sharing these horrible details of the effects of the disease of addiction on his family, taking as it did his 20-year-old son, Sage, over 5 years ago. Carmine, thanks for your candor. I can hear it in your voice. These events, while they may have taken a few years ago, are fresh in your mind, and you know it's like it's going on right now, and it is for many, many people. Tell us about the nonprofit. Tell us about Sarge's Army. You're located in the western part of Pennsylvania. Where are you?
Yeah, we're Irwin, Pennsylvania. We're like 30 miles east of Pittsburgh, and we are a nonprofit. Started 10 days after Sage passed, and I sit on the advisor council for drug and alcohol abuse in Harrisburg. I'm blessed to be on there, bringing changes. But we do a lot in our community. We go around and we inspire people to share the message when they're ready. We do family recovery groups. Sadly, we do a grief group. I speak in schools everywhere, not just in Pennsylvania. I go to West Virginia, Ohio.
Let me ask you right now, what did you know about forming a nonprofit?
I knew nothing. Yeah. And I wish I didn't have to do a nonprofit because sometimes it gets in the way of my mission. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't want to worry about running a nonprofit. I want to be in the street.
You just want to spread the word. I understand. But if people out there going, what can I do? Here's a guy who has his own business, works with his hands and decides to start a nonprofit. And you're probably thinking, well, I don't know how to start a nonprofit. Well, neither did Carmen until he did.
No. My wife is the mechanic. She's the motor that keeps Sage's Army running. Without her, we wouldn't be running. We do, one of the things we're working on is recovery housing, the sober living houses, quality houses. Aftercare is so vital for people when they come home from rehab. They need solid housing. You know, sometimes, sadly, they can't go back home. They burnt that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So they need solid recovery housing and around solid people in recovery that understand recovery. So that's what we're working on now. I'm looking for buildings, houses, and I'm trying to put that organization, like we're creating Sage Haven Homes, and it's going to be a safe place to go. There's no drugs in the sober living house. You know, they might be next door, they might be down the street, but in a well-run house, you know, they're not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sadly, some people could sneak them in, but you nip that in the bud right away.
The Commonwealth is doing a pretty good job of, you know, staying on top and keeping an eye on regulating those sober living facilities, but more needs to be done. I want to give people an opportunity to visit the website. They can just go to sagesarmy.com. Is that where it is?
Yep. sagesarmy.com. You'll find all our links to our Facebook page on there. We have two Facebook pages, a closed page, a closed group, and an open page. You have to ask to be on the closed group. That's where a lot of good talk is.
People can donate as well on that page, right?
Yeah, they can donate. On our website, there's a donate page. You know, there's merch and stuff you can buy to support us. Speak it. Don't be afraid to speak it. And you know what? It's the grassroots. That's where the change is happening. You know, there's change in Harrisburg and stuff, but the real change comes in the community with the people.
Well, yeah.
We're the ones out there making the change, building up and creating these places ourselves. We do more with no money than they do with hundreds of thousands of dollars. Because people trust us more than they trust our government, sadly.
Carmine, thanks so much for joining us, and
thank you for your
continued work in this. I know it has not been hard. Again, the website is sagesarmy.com. We thank Carmine Capozzi for joining us here on Recovery Radio, and maybe we'll have you back soon, huh?
Yeah, I would like that. Thank you.
Thanks, Carmine. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Rest of you as well. Enjoy your weekend, and please look for Recovery Radio. We're here every Saturday.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.